Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Jennifer Crawley, a Beacon in Care Management co-founder of the Life Care Management Institute in Eagle View West. Jennifer infuses her passion for guiding healthcare professionals and families through complex care landscapes with her authoritative books, Seven Steps to Long-Term Care Planning, and the Life Care Management Handbook. She equips others with knowledge and strategies for navigating the healthcare system effectively. A nurse by training, her expertise spans catastrophic case management to Alzheimer's care, embodying a holistic approach to health setbacks. Leading with compassion and efficiency, Jennifer's work not only stabilizes lives, but also paves the way for a sustainable care management practice, making her a trailblazer in the industry. I've asked her to join us here today to share her story and how we can all grow together into a better future. So Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. And thank you for that great introduction.
You're welcome. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you here. So I always like to start off with, before you got into this, what were you doing? How did you get into this? Are your parents in this field?
No, actually, I don't have any nurses in my immediate family. I would say an aunt was a nurse. Working in healthcare, you don't have to just be a nurse, though. But I would say even that, my family is really comprised of business owners, teachers, artists, and hospital executives. But together, I think I do have some attributes that I can say have come from my parents to help me be the business person that I wanted to be. You did ask, like, how did I get here? And what was I doing before this? Yeah, I actually, from the time I was a little girl, I wanted to be a nurse. So I was driven into this field. I feel I was called into it, really, wanting to care for others. In fact, when I still joke to this day to my parents about how when I was a little girl, I would pretend to have a doctor's office. And some people, we tend to always be like, she's practicing to be a doctor, but I was always practicing to be the nurse. And from a very young age, I was in that role of working together in a teamwork kind of fashion to help the doctor to see the patient and care for them. And that led me to go and get my bachelor's degree and started out working mostly in like the critical care setting. I dabbled with a few other roles as a more like a hospital-based nurse, but then I got into my business just as a hatchling back in 2002 when I was really just having my second child and envisioning a future for myself that was going to put me more in control of the dynamics related to my career.
A lot of people give the advice that if you're young, go and start a business because it's harder when you're older and you have kids and responsibilities. And you said you were having your second child and you're like, let's start a business. Like how?
Yeah, I'm a very impatient person in many ways. And I remember I've been a nurse for 30 years now. So I'm calling out on my age here, but I've been a nurse for 30 years. And back then, when I was going to school at The Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio, to get my bachelor's, I remember my instructors telling me that the baby boomers, this terminology of baby boomers was used to define this great big population of people simultaneously growing older together, and right, that it was going to leave vacancies in nursing alone that were in the multiples of thousands. And we're talking about predictions of the state of Florida, for example, which is very highly populated, densely populated with a large majority of people that are age 65 and older. Look at that as an example. They were telling me back 30 years ago when I was getting my bachelor's in nursing that this was going to be a profound impact to my nursing career because there was projected to be at least 50,000 shortages of nurses alone in the state of Florida.
Whoa.
So I was actually already thinking to myself, there's an opportunity.
Yeah.
And then if you work in healthcare, you can't escape the fact that we are looking ahead. We're forward thinking about what it might look like for the demand that is starting to rise now in 2024.
But that's a long, it sounds like you were really early to the game, so to speak. Was it they say the pioneers get the settlers get the land?
I was, and I've always kept my eye open to possibilities and opportunities. I was always interested in the idea of what others were doing in the same space. Obviously, I was a nurse But what are others doing in the healthcare industry that's leading them toward having greater autonomy, being in control maybe of their own schedule, being something that I could still use my critical processing skills, my nursing expertise, on all the knowledge I had spent thousands of dollars getting, right?
Right.
And earning my experience that I earned, like just always my eye open to the possibilities of what I could do to can build upon the foundation that I had already started to build, like so strongly, and not do something boring,
Right.
but also potential revenue, right? Potential, how do I earn money when I'm not working in the hospital as a bedside nurse? That's the traditional way that most people envision the nurse, is at the hospital bedside, caring for those that are most ill or having babies or surgeries.
So, what were some of your biggest challenges in the beginning, and how did you overcome them?
So my biggest challenges were probably unique to me in the way that I was trying to probably do something, start a business while also parenting young children,
Right.
right? But I can say that a lot of, especially I'm generalizing here, a lot of nurses might be in that same position, or all of us. The cost of goods and housing and everything has gone up. So we
Ridiculous.
talk about when you're trying to parent and you're working to make a living to support that family, but you're also trying to start a business. Where do you find the time? Where
Right.
do you find the energy? And then there's also the funding part. And so I found my biggest challenges were trying to fit it all in and to really understand how I was going to make it happen. My biggest, the barriers for me were, didn't stand to be too high, but it took, I would say it caused maybe delays. And that goes back to my, I'm impatient. But this is what I can now know looking back. If I can take a someone that's interested in starting their business, it's not for everyone, but if you are in the position of wanting to start your business, that you have to allow yourself some space in that development mode and allow yourself the grace to keep moving forward the best you can and not put too much pressure on yourself. And I think that was my own unique aspect of a challenge that I had, was that I was always impatient and wanting things quickly and probably taking myself a little too seriously.
I love that. I think you brought up a good point. A lot of people worry about time management and productivity tools and planners, but there's also energy management that's not really spoken about. It's not, right? And I try to share this with people. I spent $50,000 on research, hiring 10 assistants, helping me going through all the academic literature on business success. I did that in 2020. This is after I had a track record of helping businesses grow and stuff. And we identified eight critical success factors, and one of them was self-efficacy. And one of that was because if you can run a mile and at the end you're like, oh, and you got to lay down, take a nap, that's your energy gas tank you bring to the day. And if you have three kids and you're trying to run a business and that stuff, like you're just not going to have the energy to get through the day at all. So if I could snap my fingers magically and now you could run 10 miles and by the end of it be okay, you actually are more resilient and have a higher amount of energy to bring to every single day of your life, more intensity, more focus. And that's something that's just not talked about in any circle. So I'm really glad that you brought that up. And the funding part, can you speak about that? I think a lot of people are afraid to put themselves out there and get sales. What would you recommend to someone who's starting out and struggling?
So starting out and struggling, you really have to understand what your market looks like and how to build the network that's going to feed that client base. And talk about my structure. I provide professional services to clients, individuals, and stakeholders. So my network is pretty much everyone in a sense. But at the same time, where is your priority as far as building those relationships? And I guess when we're doing marketing and building our networks, we talk about influencers a lot. And I think that those who influence you might be just the individuals that help you grow, recognize exactly what it is that you do. And you've built a relationship by making them feel important as well. And so it feeds each other, like the relationships that you build will help hopefully feed back to you the client base that you need. I know that's not super easy to do. When I wrote the Life Care Management Handbook, we put a whole business section in there because we know that individuals doing care management are often healthcare professionals that aren't always trained or well versed in how to build a referral network and how that really translates to a potential client. And it's worked. We taught what we've learned through all these years. What I learned starting from 2002, provided in the book to help the individual who's interested in starting their own practice really know that this is essential. We all have to keep the lights on. So how are you going to keep the revenue going? I also know that there's grants out there. I was able to receive a couple grants that was through the Small Business Association. And then it was really a matter of just prioritizing, of course, where I could have the biggest bang for my buck. And it's a daunting task because we have websites and we might have advertisements that we're trying to create. But essentially, I like my business model is fairly low cost. When you think about it, it's the startup. The website does cost money, but nowadays everything is, let me just back up. Many things have changed now since I started my practice almost 18 years ago. I formalized it 18 years ago. I was really starting it as a hatchling even 4 years prior to that. But that's the delay I mentioned earlier about I wanted it quickly, but it really took me a little bit longer than I thought. And that was because of what I had going on in my own personal life. I allowed myself that grace, right? But I was able to take those funds of mine and help and work with a professional developer to get a website going. Nowadays, you can really create your own website with the technology that's there, and you can use AI now to have a website created for you. It's things have changed. So you can actually get off the ground fairly with cost efficiency, just of course through those systems to let the world know you exist. But that network you want to build, that referral network in your community, most of the time does not cost really anything to build those relationships.
Can you
And
speak to that?
in my practice, every person's a potential client because we all know somebody that might be going through a health event that became more complicated. We might know somebody who's suffering with a new diagnosis of memory loss. We know someone that's aging or injured or
Can you speak to that? People that are listening, they go, man, that sounds great. I wish I had a network of people sending me referrals. What are some of the basic, and obviously they can go get your book, but since you're here, what are some of the basic tenets that you would say, like the 80-20, like
So of the referral network is what you're talking about as far as what does that look like? And is it a web? That's how I like to describe it as a web of influencers at the middle. And the influencers at the middle are those in my practice, which is connecting to the client and then maybe a stakeholder such as an insurer or an attorney that needs help with the client. We connect with them and then it turns over into something that we provide to them as a professional service. The people that are at the center of that are the ones that are most connected, probably to the healthcare experience and the healthcare journey. The industry itself is at the center, which is healthcare, which in that bubble, the center of the web, healthcare is a ginormous, it's a ginormous center, and it should be strong and it should be large. And think about the layers outside of that are interconnected, such as financial advisors, estate planning attorneys, care advocates, case managers, discharge planners, primary care offices. And so I'm mixing up the healthcare and the connector pieces that all work together in complex situations,
You're almost talking about like
right?
blue ocean or 90-degree marketing kind of strategy. Like a financial planner, someone may not think is a referral partner, but it makes sense that when you say that, and I understand what you do, I go, oh, that makes sense. Financial planner wouldn't be all the time, but a financial planner, that would be something that estate planning, that would be something where you might be a check on their to-do list, like type things. So how do you suggest someone build a referral network? And you talked about how do you translate that into clients? Like, how do you say, hey, can you send me business tactfully?
Oh, yeah. And it's just the list goes on of potential services, but you overwhelm if you haven't met the individual you're trying to network with and you overwhelm them with all of the list of things that you can do, it's not as forward moving as you'd think.
Right.
So really it's just trying to, right? Because they get overwhelmed and they're not really clear. And so really trying to hone in on what your message is, clearly on what I do. And one of the strategies I did was I followed my passion, and that's caring for those with dementia. And I took extra training, which I've done a lot of. I've done a lot of extra training to become be have receive accreditations for various topics of that have helped build the foundation of what I do in my business. One of them is working for those that are impacted by Alzheimer's disease or related dementia. And so I took training to become a certified trainer for others, teaching them how to provide care. And then I also am a certified dementia practitioner to be able to advise clients and help families and individuals with the basic overall care management of that condition. And so that has helped me to have a niche, like a specific service that I can clearly state, I'm a dementia specialist. And it resonates with everyone because, unfortunately, nowadays, everyone has at least become familiar with the name dementia or Alzheimer's, that because of the rise in the number of cases we've seen, right? I think we can honestly say if you're going to ask a handful of hands in an audience, who in here has known somebody with a diagnosis of dementia, I think almost everyone would raise their hand.
I agree. We say there are
Okay, so if I can,
riches and niches,
so
but
the does that clearly state everything that I can offer them? No. So it provides them enough to be like, aha, I get it. What's my aha moment? And so it really will depend, though, on the individual sitting in front of me that I'm trying to meet. So an estate planning attorney, for example, might need someone to help with a guardianship assessment or something like that. Someone that's trying to enter into a legal arrangement of such, we can get called in as professionals to do a consultation. And so other clients might be a financial advisor. They're seeing clients frequently that are divulging very personal information to them. So they're often the ones that might refer because they're the ones that are getting that very personal information of, hey, things aren't so hot in our house. Here's what's going on. The financial advisor's left to go, wow, I'm really sorry about that, but that's out of my wheelhouse.
Right.
But I know a professional that I just met. Oh, I met her, it's been 4 months now, but I met her and she said she specializes in that. And you know what? How about I connect you? And so it's like having your own hashtag or your own tagline. And it's like, what do you need to say specifically? So that's where it goes back to, we really need to put the work into ourselves to have the confidence to know exactly what we're doing, to be able to have that elevator speech or have that sentence, that one-liner that helps them go, oh, I get it. Or at least lets them maybe learn more in the event that they think it might be relevant to make a referral to you.
Yeah. When you said that, you reminded me when you said, is that the only thing I can do? No, I can do a lot. And it reminded me of Geico. For 15 years, Geico's marketing has said one thing. 15 minutes can save you 15% on car insurance. I'm giving them the free advertising here, but it's because that's their entry point. They have life insurance, they have business insurance, travel insurance, they have all that. But they know that the lowest quality lead that they can likely profit off of is someone who has a car. Because if you have a car, you got to pay for the car, you got to pay for insurance, you got to pay for gas, you got to pay your car payments. So if you have a car, you probably have a job. And if you can afford a car, you can probably afford insurance. So we give you a good deal on your car insurance. We beat whoever's made you any other offer out there. We might break even or lose money even on that. But now we've got your credit card on file. You're doing business with us, and we can talk about all the other things that we can insure you with. So that was like the entry. When you said that, I was like, yeah. And you also reminded me when you talked about, I love that you're a dementia specialist. I love that. I said it before. I felt maybe I was trying to show off how smart I am. I should put my ego to the side when I was like riches and niches, bitches. But that's trying to remind myself. But there was also something called the income earning ladder, where at the baseline are generalists, and generalists earn what any generalists earn. A dentist makes what any dentist can make, typically, assuming they have a full practice. But a specialist earns more than a dentist because there's a higher certainty in result and outcome. And so by identifying yourself as a specialist, you already stand head and shoulders above the rest. And if I need orthodontic work, the dentist might be able to figure it out, but I don't want to be the guinea pig. So I'll pay more to have a specialist do it because they'll get it right the first time. People who make more than the specialists are the trainers of specialists. One, because they can sell training specialists. But also when you hire a trainer specialist, I know that they may not be the best in the world, but I should at least get industry average out of a trainer. So again, you're paying for a higher certainty of outcome. And then at the very top of the ladder are the celebrities, the law of supply and demand. Dr. Phil, as great as he is, he may not be the world's greatest, but if he were to auction off an hour of his time, it would be bid up. I think that's great advice that you gave people. So having really clear messaging on what you do, a specific niche in terms of who it's for, you mentioned getting some sort of possible, some sort of certification or credentials to back up what you do. And having a specific service you can clearly state in a one-liner, your USP, your elevator pitch, your hashtag. And it sounds like then really connecting and building a web of influencers. And this is, I got this from, I think it was Evan Pagan. He used to talk about the second time the car doesn't start. That people don't typically call a mechanic the first time they get in their car, turn the key and the engine doesn't start. And they jiggle stuff and the gas and the brake and then and it starts up. They go, oh, good. And then they just drive. But the second time that happens, where they're like, oh, I might not be able to get to work today. The second time it happens, they go, I need to find someone. And so you're almost trying to figure out the step before the step. Where is that second time the car doesn't start? Where is the stuff coming up when someone's going, hey, maybe you should talk to someone about this? And you said this before in our earlier meet and greet, and maybe we could pivot to there for a little bit. You talked, because I'm at the time of this recording, I'm 40. I'll be 41 in about a month. And I'm pretty fit. I'm pretty healthy. I think I probably physically outperform a lot of people my age. I can handstand walk 25 feet. I can back squat over my body weight. I can deadlift about 1.5 times my body weight. I can bench my body weight. I'm there, but I can tell that entropy is knocking on my door. And you talked about that. Can you speak to that a little bit? Like the concept that a lot of people don't plan for, perhaps their, I'm almost scared to say a number for their 70s, 80s, 90s. They're not thinking about that. Can you, I'm not the expert. So I'm just saying, yeah. You talked about that in our meet and greet. And I thought that was a great thing. Can you speak to that?
I talk about this all the time, especially with my colleagues working in the industry, of the frustrations that we see, the really challenges that can be overcome. But it's, society has built a positive, youthful, want it to be youthful. And they have a hard time really emphasizing the positive nature of spending this prolonged time as an older adult. And actually, our older adulthood can be longer than our childhood. But do we talk about it? Do we prepare about it? Do we participate in all the things to make it worthy and full and rich and thriving, and talking about the positivity of it? And I'm talking about the challenges too, the problems. And so that I'm in this arena trying to promote long-term care planning, because we've seen the results when there isn't any plan or any familiarity, and how troubling it can be, right? And that's what we're here for. That's what actually I do for my business. We try to straighten the curveball, straighten the course for somebody that's gone through a difficult situation. But I'm not going to kid you. When I first, one of the credentials I did right away when I was still working in bedside nursing, this was before I left the hospital bedside nursing and went full time to my business. But one of the other credentials I did, which has been the overlying theme of my foundation and my practice, my methodology that I carry out every day, is I became a certified life care planner. And I came out of that 1 year long study and after my certification and said, I'm going to help everyone long-term care plan. And I was envisioning the younger, older adult, and maybe the healthy getting ready to retire, or maybe just retired, and that they were going to sit down with me and want to prepare for these things, because I had seen it in the hospital, right? I had seen it already. I already had witnessed years and years of being a nurse by then, and had witnessed the aftermath of somebody even with a known health condition who had an unexpected kind of progression of their condition. And it was maybe not so pretty. It was messy and they were not well, and it disrupted the whole family. And we had to figure out how to fix them and get them back home. And it was a lot of work to do it because they hadn't really prepared anything. And so I came out of being this life care planning training and said, I'm going to teach everybody. That didn't work out very well. I didn't become rich doing that, but it still to this day is still the methodology that I have honed in from that time that I started doing that to this day, so many years later. And I tell you what, people now are paying me to consult with them to do long-term care planning. And
Right.
so it's become important now, more relevant to more stakeholders. And so more people are talking about it. We're also seeing a younger population of the adult children who are way more engaged and not as afraid, I want to say. And I hate to generalize like that, but sometimes you just have to. When we compare generational, the inconsistencies that go between, it's not real clear to me, but what the things that are evident is that we have differences in the engagement and willingness and the overcoming of the fear of talking about things that are related to end of life
Like
and that older age. And
what are the top three or five biggest mistakes people make?
when not long-term care planning, basically not, okay, one of them is not having the legal documents in order to be able to have a proxy or somebody that would fill in for you in the event that you needed them to make a decision. And so those are typically related to healthcare decisions. But think about your own house, and or maybe it's not a house, maybe it's an apartment where you live. Think of all the things that you own, the furniture. How about your bank accounts? How about your car or your bicycle or artwork, any assets that you have or business? Who would be able to help manage those in the event of something happening? And so we do see an improvement with those legal documents as we see legal document clinics come up, things. But unfortunately, we tend to believe that all of this is just old person problems, but really it's
Yeah,
everybody's
nobody plans for that.
challenges.
No one's like, I'm gonna have a car accident next week, Friday at 3 p.m., and then I'm gonna be in a hospital bed for 40. Like, that's just never said, no one ever.
The other part
So
is,
you need to have a legal proxy for a decision maker. You need to consider
legal proxy.
living
And
arrangements.
what are your, who is it? I do consultations now, and several of the individuals I've helped, I've gone into their house. I've gone into so many hundreds of houses in my area here and helped people do the long-term care planning, designing an aging roadmap. And so even the most prepared will have their legal documents done, such as the power of attorney documents. However, they have never shared their wishes with the person that they've given the authority to make decisions in the event that they cannot. And so we have this disconnect of, yeah, we got these power of attorney documents done. Who is your power of attorney? And have you told them what your wishes are? And are they able to step forward? Where's the information they need to serve you in this capacity? And so we have. That's a little multifold of one of the three things that we see as maybe the oops type or the we didn't know. And mostly this is not most Americans' fault. It's really this is an example of how society has led us to believe that there's this aging phenomenon happening, but we're not really talking about it. And it's okay to not. And so we're just so focused on being our younger self, and maybe we just are afraid. And I think there's a lot to be said about being a little bit afraid of talking about it means that it might come real. So it's overcoming a lot of
Become real
psychology.
for everybody.
So
Okay.
the legal documents, the other one is like, what's your plan for where you're going to live as you grow older? And have you considered all of the variables with that? And this is really, each one of these is not an easy real, I have no really simple answer to these, because what happens is it exposes a lot of other things that are interconnected,
Right.
such as where you live as you age. Not every individual who ages is going to have problems of magnitude that make it absolutely difficult to remain in their home. We just know it's more likely than not that you may experience more difficulty
You
and
probably
may
don't want to live
require.
like in a five-story house as you get older. Those stairs, I've seen this because my parents are big-time bowlers. My adoptive parents are big-time bowlers, and we've seen people who pass away and then their family's left with a house. Actually, a friend of mine, I'm trying to get him on the show. He was running a company that basically they helped auction off everyone's stuff. Like something would happen, they got to get the house, everything inventoried and sell what can be sold. And he built a massive business helping people with that because that's a huge thing. Because again, nobody plans for it. And then your kids are stuck with it and they're in their own lives and they don't necessarily have the time to go through everything, but some things are sentimental. And so that's a huge part. And then you talk about like where you're going to live and what you're physically capable of doing. Will you need to be near something for to, do you have to get your meds every so often? Do you have to have checkup? So there's a lot. I think that those are two. So far, I've got the whole legal stuff in terms of maybe a will, what's going to happen with your assets and who can make the, if you're unable to make decisions for yourself, who would make those decisions? Where you're going to live. I think those are two really powerful questions that people need to ask. Most people, selling prevention is never as popular as the cure because the bleeding neck issue is the neck's not bleeding. So I don't need to pay for, but then when the neck starts bleeding, they get real quick on top of it. And it's unfortunate because every day we all get one day older. And so I think this is really important stuff. Even with our businesses, we're entering an era where I think baby boomers own something like 60, 70%, maybe more of all small businesses. And who's gonna buy them? Who's gonna take over? Who's,
The succession planning. It's,
yeah.
yep. Yeah, the succession planning. It requires strategy. It takes some time. It takes some investment and energy. And so we just have to reemphasize the importance and that it's okay. Becoming familiar with these topics that are very person-centered, person-family-centered, and often value-based takes time. And so the overwhelming theme is that if you never talk about anything, your brain likes what's familiar. And so in the event there is a sudden change or a rise in needs that maybe become slightly uncontrollable or overwhelming, then you're going to be more likely to handle that and cope and adjust because you've become familiar with this. Even if it was 10 years prior, it's something that you talked about. You almost have a personal strategy on board. And so when we talk about just looking at where you're going to live as you grow old, it has a lot of variables associated with that, including who's going to care for you. So maybe that's number three. What does your village look like in the event you needed care? Because I can tell you this, right now we're facing a geriatric workforce shortage. This
Right.
is not in just my area, which is,
Yeah. Worldwide, it is a
Montana. This is
huge issue.
across the United States and everywhere. And then if you find care and can get it in your home because you live within an area there, the services are, you have access to resources and support services, right? The cost of that is
Astronomical.
really outside of the budget of most families unless they've been strategic. And so again, it all falls back onto each other, the strategy, the intention, the forward thinking that's required to be more familiar and do the best you can to be set up. When we choose houses that are isolated and difficult to get access to resources such as healthcare services or support services, and support services when are things that help someone with their day-to-day, or they can be routine supports to just do maintenance. And so there's a whole host of things that individuals may need help with, such as bill paying. How about maintaining the house, the yard work? How about the housekeeping, grocery shopping? And so we look at all these dynamics that make up an individual. And these are the things that need to be mitigated when there's a health condition that's become overwhelming or a memory loss that's translated into a dementia diagnosis or older age that has been aggravated by a health condition. And so it's not usually aging alone, although we do know that normal aging does cause changes to the human body. And so we have to just recognize that. And I think we're so fearful of this phase, and it's how do we get over that? And that's a bigger human, it's like a human psychology change
Mortality.
of mortality and living your best life. Living your longest life with frailty is expensive. and ne not necessarily what we're after. And so the sooner we can engage folks in doing some long-term care planning, it's they put the center of the focus goes back on them and maybe what they can do better to optimize their health and well-being. And that could be just recognizing that now is the time. It's never too late to engage in these conversations that are so important.
I agree wholeheartedly. There's so many components to it as well. You can talk about a care network. You can, even if your family can write a check and throw someone into a community somewhere, what's the culture of that community? I remember I've heard some people talk about that more people could be living past 100, they believe. But there's almost a culture in certain medical institutions. If you're 21 and you go see the doctor about an ankle problem, they'll help you solve it and try their best to get you back to 100%. But if you're 55 and you go see a doctor about the same issue, they're like, yeah, you're just old. There's no attempt to get you back to 100%. They're like, that's just what your ankle does now. Like it just hurts. You can take some aspirin and you're like, oh, but I have an ulcer. What do you want? Do you want your ulcer to hurt or your ankle? They're like, there's not this same approach that you would give a youthful person. So there's also that component to it as well, where there's almost like a giving up of the med. And so it's again, so it's not just can you afford and what's the nicest home on the block? It's also what kind of people do you want to be put into? Do you, I actually, a close friend of mine, him and his friend, they run a failure to treat center for cancer patients in Tijuana, Mexico. And basically, you've had cancer, insurance has paid all they're willing to pay, and they just send you a letter saying, we tried. See, when they're outside of a lot of the red tape, we'll say, and parasitic profiteering. And they get a lot of people that come there, try to come there first because that's their chosen. They don't want to do the chemo. They don't want to do that other stuff. And so that's again, before you end up in a situation, and not a lot of this is a mystery either. If you look up the top causes of death, it's cardiovascular diseases, respiratory issues, cancer. That's the 80-20 right there. It's cancer, cardiovascular issues, respiratory problems. And so right off the bat, a lot of people, just a little bit of thought and planning can avoid living under a bridge. In Canada, they've got the medically, what is it, MAID? I don't know, a medically assisted something death, institutionalized death. So I don't forget what it is. But my parents alone know four people who just gave up. They're like, everything hurts. I can't afford to live. I'm just gonna maybe book an appointment with the doctor. And they went through with it. One of them was very wealthy, but had no kids, no legacy, no one to take over the business, lost physical abilities, and was just like, just get it over with, doc. And that's unfortunate. I really like what Elon Musk has said, is that as far as we know, this planet is the only candle of consciousness that we're aware of in the darkness of the universe. And we have to really do what we can to preserve it. And so I just think,
Well, it's risky doing nothing because you leave it all on the table for someone else to make the decisions for you and with potentially a lot less options. So if the options are limited, then what does that leave for you? And so I'm not going to, I can't tell you that I can change the outcomes
Of course.
of individuals I serve. What's done is done in many ways, but we can change the experience. And what we often try to do is put the decisions back into the place that they should be, which is for the individuals and their family members. And what you just said about your friend not having anyone involved, that's the scariest prospect there. From what I understand, there's one in four seniors that are aging solo. So solo agers, we've called them in the industry. And these are individuals for whatever reason. Maybe they've separated, they're widowed, they're divorced, maybe they never got married. Maybe they don't have any children. Maybe they did have children and their children are not available, or just for whatever reason. Every humans are complex. The solo agers absolutely hands down need to prepare for these converse prepare and go through these conversations with themselves or a professional and really work at What does my health look like? Okay, maybe I am healthy and I'm not taking any medications, rare, but maybe I'm healthy and not taking medication. There's still room for me to focus right now on what I can do to manage my health as it is today,
Right.
knowing that I'm in the aging process. And then all the other conversations about who will make decisions for me, who will be my power of attorney, where will I live, and who will take care of me if I need to. Do I have enough money to pay the $30 to $40 an hour that agency-based home health personal care attendants are charging? But those are the things that we need to become aware of because we've seen the devastation, the loneliness, and the financial impoverishment from situations in which individuals have not prepared. And like I said, it's not necessarily their fault. They're solely their fault. It's just they haven't learned. They haven't learned that this is part of what should be natural.
Comes back to school. School prepares you for a job. It doesn't prepare you for life. And I think that if anything, since COVID, there's been a lot of, I saw, it's not that the world's getting worse, it's that the veil is being lifted and people are becoming aware of a lot of the flaws that perhaps we've existed and tolerated. And I'm hoping that this is, sunlight's the best disinfectant. And so I agree 100%. That's a huge issue that we're facing. And especially in the West, coming, living in Southeast Asia, it's really common for two, three generations to live in a single home. And that
Yes.
indicates a lot of this stuff, where the grandparents now are in the Philippines, they still have a positive birth rate. A lot of times the grandparents are helping care for younger kids. What a great
Okay.
way to spend your elderly, passing on your knowledge and wisdom. But in the West, it's like everyone lives on their own, everyone's scattered across the
Right.
country or across the planet. And there's, so there's even culturally, there's certain things to be addressed. I want to ask, where do you see the future of this? You think long term, 5, 10 years, 20 years. What are you paying attention to? What are some of the trends? You've already talked and given, we talked to people here with their business. We've talked about, what do we call it, the long-term care planning a little bit. What are some of the trends that you're paying attention to long term that everyone else should be on top of?
Yeah, get lined up. There's going to be just bunches of opportunities. So imagine a cohort, a group of individuals of over 70 million who are simultaneously going through old age together, living the longest time or duration that we've ever seen, the longevity that we're seeing, even with chronic health conditions that are sometimes complex and progressive in nature, individuals are managing to live longer than what we've ever seen before. And when we look at the baby boomer population, for example, and I hate to keep blaming them, but you know what? They're going to be the reason why we see an explosion of businesses to serve that population because it's everything from care managers, such as what I do with life care management, to help navigate through the various aspects of care and improve the healthcare journey and the experience and help them get a handle on managing their health conditions and their home environment. But there's also a need for let's get the plan going and let's follow it and let's hone in on what we need to do to improve your livelihood. But there's everything from like pet care, right? Support services, doing cost-efficient services. But if you continue to, if you offer a service that's valuable to somebody and you do good work, it's going to just roll over into word of mouth. Again, that referral base. Of people sometimes are desperate to find handymen to install like a grab bar. Or how about installing some of the features of new technology that we see that are exploding in the aging market? And do you think our seniors today feel confident in setting up some of those? No. So there's whole like technology for aging and some of the care management in the provider offices that we know that nurses are already working towards building their practices to include. And so it just goes on and on. And so it's interesting times because we've seen a great change since the pandemic of how the facility-based care is and the availability. And we're cu coupled with like nursing shortages and the geriatric workforce shortage in general. And it's going to be interesting times. But what it's telling me is that we need to go back to the family structure and the concept of the very personal factors that make up an individual and look at ourselves, look at it, and really try to be strategic about it as a family. Don't be afraid to talk about it, but the opportunities, It scares me to think about how we're going to meet the demand for just healthcare in general. But I'm in the community-based side, and that's what I teach, is how to prepare people outside of the hospital-based setting.
Right.
But we
Yeah.
have to come together and take some responsibility by ourselves, like the self-motivated, self-initiated, and self-engagement. If we all do it together ourselves, then it'll become easier to get through it when we're helping our parents or our friends who are going through an experience and they're not prepared.
Yeah. I love that. And that's I beat the drum of personal responsibility. I'm very into that. I've never really known a participation award my whole life. I very much appreciate the message that you shared, and I agree wholeheartedly. I think there's going to be a great opportunity there to serve these people. A lot of these people, again, they just don't want to be forgotten. They get to the end of the road and they want, so just some helping someone create the modern day version of a scrapbook of their life, that would be a huge, there's so many opportunities around. I agree 1,000%.
I think that's where the care management role works so well, is because we connect with individuals and we get to know all those socioeconomic factors, the social, psychosocial factors, the social determinants of health is what we call them, the things that make up who they are, but they can often be the strongest barriers to being able to successfully manage your health and health condition, right? And we're the ones going and really figuring out, okay, this pet of yours, for example, like your dog's really hard to take care of because you can barely take care of yourself. Let's figure out how can we do that. And that's part of what we do. But individuals finally feel validated and supported in a way that they haven't been in
Yep.
so long. And that, like you said, the things that we can do to enrich other people's lives, when especially those that are disabled and aren't able to participate as easily in things, and older adults who we know loneliness is a huge problem in our country. And that's because, again, it all relates to how we've just done things, and it's been okay to just go and live by yourself and be somewhat isolated and not have the multi-generational
This
response
whole great
team.
culture is coming home to roost. Real nature, if you look at nature in general, nature has no use for species that don't have high reproduction rates. Turtles have hundreds of babies, so half a dozen can survive. That's going to be a real, have more kids, people, have more kids, have more kids, adopt more kids. I think there's just a huge, there's so much depth to this. I think, like you say, it's a real big issue, and it's not just the West. China's got 35 million men that will never be able to know a female partner. That I used to work nightclubs when I was 19. I moved out on my own when I was 17, and I wanted to see my friends on weekends. And so I got a job working at the security company that did the 5 nightclubs in town. I'd just go work at the one my friends were at, so my breaks I could be with them. And anytime that there were no girls out, we knew we needed to call more guards in, more security guys in, because there are no women. All the men could do is get drunk and fight, get drunk and play pool, whatever. But aside from that, the only other option is fight. But if there were lots of girls, no one really wanted to fight. They were all too preoccupied, you know? And so 35 million men in China, I'm like, that's a problem right there. And we're also seeing all these protests and stuff with farmers. So again, if you, I just, it's just so important. It's like what is it? A pound, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. A little bit
Not a
of
cure.
planning now. Food security, like just simple things like that. And yeah.
Well, yeah, there's not enough healthcare organizations or healthcare companies with enough capital and time to fix
Yeah.
the problems that come up from the lack of planning and manage self
Right.
engagement and your own health and well-being. And so that's what we're seeing today, is that there's a lot of charitable care and hospitals that are having individuals stuck in there for days and days because they don't have a safe plan for discharge.
And some
And
hospitals are great, and some hospitals are parasites on their community. I'm just my personal opinion here.
anyway, we could go on. Like you said, it's a very multifactorial topic: long-term care planning and life care planning, designing what your aging roadmap will look like. But it doesn't have to be complicated. It can be a more simple process using the 7 steps and then just basically working through it. If you start early, you're not doing it under duress or crisis. Bring your team together and start having these conversations. You can all do it together. And I tell you what, it gives a lot of peace of mind
Oh.
when you can encourage clients to feel more ready. And we've done the best we can. We can't prepare for everything, but we can become familiar with what it might look like.
I love it. If people, this has been such a great call, people may want to let's do it more than once to make sure they get, I'm a writer downer. I got a page or two of notes. Jennifer, people want to learn more if they want to get in touch, if they have questions, follow up. What are some of the best ways for them to connect?
So I have a website right now, which is my private practice, which is eagleus.com, and you can use the contact us page and send me a message through there just online. You can also email me at jennifer@lcmexpert.com. That stands for Life Care Manager. So that's jennifer@lcmexpert.com, and that's affiliated with the Life Care Management Institute. So I actually have two businesses. One is in the actual practice, delivering the care in the community and to stakeholders. Really, I work throughout the state of Montana, but I also do have clients throughout the nation and just various areas depending on the services that I'm delivering to them. But I also have the Life Care Management Institute, which is at lcmexpert.com, which has the handbook, products, and courses for professionals that are interested in adding this to their current business or wanting to get into a new business model for a diversified care, professional services that are delivered and helping to provide a number of solutions for the healthcare industry, including, helping people get through the complex situations that arise unexpectedly and some that kind of come about in an expected fashion, but an unprepared way.
Love it. So people who want to learn more, go to eagleviewwest.com, EAGLE, view, VIEW, West, WEST.com. You can also send an email to Jennifer, Jennifer, at L as in lemon, C as in camel, M as in me, expert.com, LCMexpert.com. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an honor and a pleasure. Thank you for coming and sharing with my followers and I, knowing you have your own kids, your own customers, clients, your own followers. Thank you for coming and helping us so we can all walk into our aging future better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Stay well. And thank you for the opportunity and the time to share my information and encourage everybody to get out there and think about what they want for their own life.
And go get a copy of her book. We'll throw out the book titles again. I don't have my notes in front of me.
Yeah. So I
Life
have the Life
Care
Care
Management
Man.
Handbook. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's a big one. The Life Care Management Handbook is designed to be more of a textbook style book for healthcare professionals. You don't actually have to be a healthcare professional to do life care management, but it's helpful to obviously be very knowledgeable, and if you run the business, you need to have probably a nurse or social worker on board to help you. But that's to if for anyone interested in starting or growing successful life care management practice. And then 7 Steps to Long-Term Care Planning is the book to it's a 7-step process to engage in the crucial conversations related to designing your roadmap for aging.
I love it. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Yeah, you have a great rest of your day. Thanks for the time. Stay well.